The views and opinions expressed by hosts and guests on Patriots with Grit do not necessarily reflect those of Patriots with Grit LLC, its founders, and owners.
Get ready for truth bombs and guidance from conservative leaders and entrepreneurs, from God-fearing, freedom-loving, truth-telling, patriotic Americans. Welcome to Patriots with Grit. Now let's jump into today's episode with your host, Darren Ross.
On today's show, we're talking about the dirty world of sex trafficking.
And we'll see this through the eyes of a former sex trafficking undercover detective.
She didn't know every day whether she'd be wearing a badge and a gun or high heels and miniskirts. Here we go.
We've had great leaders. They understood that there was something not right. And Eisenhower was really the first to warn the nation that, hey, there's this thing called the military-industrial complex, and we've got to be careful of it. Fast forward to John F. Kennedy. He actually called out the CIA, made the comment, I'm going to break it into a million pieces. And you have to ask yourself, what did he know? So for 40 years, we have this Cold War, giant programs that are being built. But that Cold War, it gave rise to the things that President Eisenhower and President Kennedy warned us about. The military-industrial complex, the intelligence services at the time, we now know in Kennedy's assassination, we're part of his demise. It's like, how did we ever get here?
Travis, there's one coming right at you.
Most people do not understand the volume of trafficking that's going on in America, in our own backyard.
People want to think that human trafficking only exists in foreign countries.
Grab her. Hey! He's running.
The recruitment is happening online and on apps and on social media where all the kids are.
You are a product. And you have no other value.
Coming this spring, for more than 2.5 years, Frontline embedded with a special police unit.
We just learned that our arrest team is in position.
That tries to recover women.
I was out there for almost 4 years. I hated every second of it. I hated every call.
Somebody sees me like arrested like this, like the girls or the pimp or something, and then
we're not out here to just give you guys a hard time. We really do want to help get you out, okay?
Going undercover.
Once they friend me on Facebook, then I just go into their friend list and I just hit them all up with friend requests.
And online.
Some of them, they put 24 and they're actually 15.
I'll take the driver's door. Move
on. I have never, ever met a trafficker that I felt sorry for. I mean, they're literally selling humans day in and day out, making money off of them.
Female. Stopping the traffickers and the buyers.
It's cost different prices.
Fetishes, though, are extras.
So. Without customers, there's no girls out there. Without customers, there's no pimps.
From the award-winning producers of Poor Kids.
They mentally trap you more, way more than physically.
The inside story of a brutal crime.
A drug is a usable quantity that can be used up one time. A person can be trafficked over and over and over again, and that's why it's such a problem.
And the consequences.
For a lot of these victims, they spend years trying to rebuild their lives, and to have to rehash it all in trial, it's got to be really, really difficult.
With extraordinary access on the streets and through the struggles for justice.
State of Arizona.
It's painstakingly long, the time between the arrest and the time that we see a suspect in trial.
Additional on behalf of the state.
A story of courage.
What was taken from me the most is like the idea of just having like a normal relationship.
In the face of the unthinkable.
I want to have a future for myself. And like show the people who hurt me, like, you know, you hurting me just made me stronger.
Well, Well, it seems like there's no short of evil going on, Randy, today in America. What do you think?
No, it's nasty.
I mean, if it's drugs or it's immigration or in this case today, it's sex trafficking. We have an incredible guest on here today who's been highly recommended to come on to contribute to our show. She is an undercover retired detective, and she has actually played, Randy, the parts of two different people. When you get up in the morning, or when you go to work, do you realize? Do you think that you're just going to go to work and for one company and do one job?
No, because I identify as a prostitute on the side.
Okay, well, that's what our guest today is. She never knew when she woke up if she was going to be undercover or if she was going to be putting on a mini skirt and fishnet stockings and playing the part of a prostitute. Heidi, tell us a little bit about that. How was it waking up every morning not knowing which part you were going to play that day?
Definitely a role, not a daily thing personally.
Let's clarify that.
Let's clarify. No, as an undercover, it was extremely important to plan proactive operations because this is a growing problem. And so working through the unit that I worked with, we planned regular operations targeting sex buyers and traffickers.
So, I mean, you did this for several years. And I can't imagine coming home and, you hang up your gun on the side of the closet, and then the next day you're putting on prostitute apparel or whatever. But how did that? How did you deal with that emotionally? I mean, to me, it'd be kind of difficult, waking up one day playing this part and the next day playing that part. Was it something you just got used to over a matter of a few weeks and just said, "Hey, I'm comfortable in this role today"? Or walk us through that, because I think that'd be kind of difficult.
Yeah. So when I first started, it was kind of like borrowed from patrol, like temporary assignments here and there where, the unit at the time, I wasn't there yet, assigned to that unit, and they would borrow girls from patrol because they needed new faces to go out there and pose as prostitutes. And when I first started working with the unit, that's when we moved to more of what's consistent to what you see today, where you're online, advertised online, as well as out on the streets. But when I first started, it was predominantly out on the streets, and it was kind of a on-the-job, learn-as-you-go thing. There wasn't like an undercover school or anything like what we have now, where you kind of have to go through a process of this is how this goes, and then you get the blessing to do it. And so it was, really a lot of creative thinking and I don't know what the reference is, but it is a lot of thinking fast on your feet when you are in that situation as an undercover. A lot of that was conversations that, I had to prepare for mentally for sure. And then scenarios that you run through your head as far as if this person tries to grab me, this is how I'm going to respond. Or if they ask me to expose myself, or they're exposing themselves when I walk up to their car door. All of those things have happened. And so it's a matter of, being safe. It's a fine line between being safe for officer safety and getting the job done as far as posing as another person that you just aren't, but being believable enough that they think you are and accomplishing that elements of the crime.
So in the past, the buyers were referred to as Johns, and now it's a sex buyer. It goes beyond just that per se, because you've got those that are, I may say the terms wrong, but the grooming part of it in the online piece, we've had other guests on that talk about how the kids are being influenced by the online piece. Is it just kids, or are the adults getting pulled into this too?
Oh no, it's absolutely any vulnerable person that you could think of. So in one investigation that I probably will talk more about later, but it was 7 victims. And the one lady that I talk about to make this point come further to the surface, she was 40. She was a Department of Corrections officer, lost her job. So there's her vulnerability right there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Got involved with drugs, became a stripper, met the brothel owner at the strip club, and entered the life of prostitution in her 40s. Hmm. Same case. I had a girl that was 19 years old. Same case. One of the 7 victims. Full ride scholarship to Northern Arizona University. Her mom's a nurse. Well off. No history of any family violence or sexual assault. Wealthy family. She meets a guy on Craigslist. He wants to take modeling pictures of her. That guy introduces her to the brothel owner. And now for the next 10 years, her life is at the prison.
So at what point does a person, they just don't understand what's happening to them? Because once they met the brothel owner, you would think, no, this isn't a modeling thing.
So it's a matter of several different things. So to get to the nitty gritty, we have to define what human trafficking is in the first place. Mm-hmm. Human trafficking is a crime involving not only forced sex, but also forced labor. And that doesn't get talked about a lot, but there is a situation of forced labor. But for today's purposes, in my personal experience, sex trafficking is that forced sex portion of human trafficking. And human trafficking, in order for me to prove either forced sex or forced labor, I have to prove force, fraud, or coercion. Now, force is pretty self-explanatory. That's going to be some violent incident with some kind of assault, visible sign of injury. But the fraud and the coercion are the other two elements that people don't think about. And in answer to your question, her being involved in this situation came from the fraud, the false promises. We're going to live in this amazing house. I'm going to take care of you. We're going to get you your hair done, your nails done. You won't have to worry about anything. You just have to do this to help participate in the entire situation we have going on here to, you know, pay your way kind of. And then the coercion is in the form of threats. And if there's something I've learned in the last 16 years investigating this crime is that a trafficker is the most reliable person you will ever meet. If they say they're going to beat you up, they're going to beat you up. If they say they're going to get you in the car and they're going to take you to your mom's house, and depending on how they feel at that moment, because you made them really mad, they're going to shoot up your mom's house. Kicking and screaming, they're going to grab you by the hair, stuff you in the car, drive you over to your mom's house, and make you believe this is going to happen. Because if they don't have victims that believe what I say is going to happen, then these victims would never stay. And so there's constant reminders to these victims of the force, fraud, and coercion, really. And that's the only answer I have for you as to how she may have fallen into this situation and got stuck in it.
So you spent how many years doing the undercover piece of it?
Well, so I did 25 years at Phoenix Police Department and almost 14 there as an undercover. I've worked undercover for other agencies since then, but that is my experience from there.
Okay. And then just kind of fill us in. What are some of the most bizarre things you saw dealing with this day to day?
Well, just the ease at which men pull up to a girl on the side of the road and solicit. Like, it isn't really, it's a couple of words, a couple of back and forth sentences to each other, and then we are consummating the act around the corner is what they think. It's very to the point. There are some savvy buyers that have been caught before, and so they're going to try and whisper or, you know, sign language or make motions with their hands in their mouth trying to say what they're trying to say. And that's where they're, you know, trying to see if you're the police, all kinds of other things. But definitely it is actually kind of easy.
Oh. Well, I don't know about you, Randy, but I've never tried to solicit sex on the street before from my car. So yes.
Even with the coupon.
I mean, look, I have a wife, I have daughters, a mom, a female dog. Last thing I want is another woman to manage. Okay. So talk to us, Heidi. Tell me about this. When a guy is driving in the, you know, strolling down in the, on the street in the Mercedes, and he sees you walking on the side of your, on the sidewalk with your mini skirt and fishnet, whatever you have on. They roll down their window. What's the conversation go like? He just like, hey, baby. I mean, does he whistle? What's kind of like, what's the wording? What's the language that people use to kind of get the ball rolling, so to speak?
Well, I think what you need to realize is that when it is this situation, it isn't just a random street in the city. It is a street known for that type of activity. Mm-hmm. And so it is men driving up and down, up and down, up and down all day and all night and approaching females walking down the side of the road. And those females are there for that reason as well. Those are the known areas for prostitution, and it's called the Blade or the Track. In Phoenix, we have that street prostitution area called 27th Avenue. There are several other locations in Phoenix, but that's the main one right now. It's quick access to the freeway for them to take off and evade law enforcement. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of transient activity, Section 8 homes, a lot of apartments, low income. It's kind of a, you know, an area that unfortunately has other crimes going on. But as far as the individuals pulling up, yes, it is they try and motion you, they may whistle, they just pull to the side and they're waiting for you to walk up because that's consistent with what the other females out there are doing. And then you approach them and you have this conversation and then it's an offer or an agreement, which is what is the element of the prostitution crime. It's a class one misdemeanor and it is in that conversation a sex act in exchange for compensation. Does not always have to be money. It could be buy my hotel room tonight. It could be drugs. I've been offered 2 tacos from Filiberto's for a blowjob before.
Tacos. Okay.
Compensation.
Well, so, you know, we don't want to get off the path of human trafficking. And so what I want to clarify is a lot of people have the misconception that these people are on the street doing this because they're just trashy people and they want to do this. You know, what we've learned in the last year is a lot of these people are being trafficked through their pimp or whoever.
Yeah, and that's where that force, fraud, and coercion happens. Mm-hmm. As far as young people getting involved in this, the reason that there is a market for young people is because of the buyers. The buyers are demanding younger people, and so the traffickers are supplying it. And so when they are seeking out youth, they're doing that mostly online now because of the convenience. When we think about traffickers, these are not people that have a 9-to-5 job. These are people that all day long, their only job is to manage the victims they have right now and to seek out new ones. And they're really skilled at manipulation and, you know, the whole process of the grooming.
So what's the most disturbing thing that you've ran across? I mean, I just want the people to understand how despicable it is.
Yeah, so there was a girl right before I retired that was on 27th Avenue in this like little tiny dress. And she was with another adult female and they were hot pink dresses. So, of course, matchy-matchy, both in blonde wigs. We saw them. So did all the buyers. And we ended up contacting them. And in trying to identify them, obviously I'm looking at this girl. I see that she doesn't look like she's 18. And then I see her do something with her hands and her gum and her mouth. And I had one of those fingerprint readers. So she put the gum and spread it over her finger, trying to hide her fingerprint. So it wasn't reading her identity. And so if she was telling me the truth about who she was, I would have been able to identify her. But obviously she was lying and trying to hide it. So I ended up having to detain her and take her down to the police station. So when I finally got to the police station, I didn't realize because it was dark. I'm out on the side of the road. Cars are flying by. I didn't realize that this girl was crippled. Like literally both of her hands were like this. She couldn't extend her fingers. So when I went to try and fingerprint her, it was the worst I've ever tried to fingerprint somebody because I couldn't extend her fingers to fingerprint her. And she wasn't really talking, but she finally told me what had happened, and it was her pimp had slammed, like made her put her hands in the car door, and he slammed the car door shut on her hands. And they were never attended to, so she healed that way with crippled fingers. And then finally, ultimately, found out she was 17.
So Heidi, you said earlier, as far as driving up and down 27th Avenue, I mean, are there some guys that literally just drive up and down? Like when we were in high school, Randy, we went cruising.
Right.
You know, and I know a lot of kids listen to the show today. They don't know what cruising is, but, you know, so are there some people that just literally drive up and down for hours at a time until they get a gal to say yes? Or kind of what's their MO there?
So the thing to think about with these buyers is they are carrying out a sexual desire, and whether they have the balls, pardon the pun, the balls enough to pull up to a girl and actually talk to her and go through with it is debatable. A lot of them are driving by to get excited to go home to take care of business themselves.
No way.
Oh. Or to go pull off on the side of the road and still watch me walking and then masturbate in his car. So that's all happened as well. So it isn't, you know, necessarily that they're cruising. They're trying to get themselves excited and build up that courage.
Oh, my gosh.
I never. I grew up on a farm in the Midwest, so this is kind of beyond my my imagination here, Heidi. So, so talk to us about, I want to know, tell us about the demographics of some of these traffickers. Because when you think of traffickers, you always think of it as a guy like in a full-length fur coat driving a Cadillac or a Mercedes or a Maserati and has a feather in his hat. But I want to know the demographic and how these people get into this career and stay in it and what kind of income they're making and all that.
Yeah. So in my 16 years now, I have made an observation that traffickers, it's almost like a car dealership guy wants to leave the car dealership to his kids, or the plumber wants to leave his plumbing business to his kids. It's a generational thing I've noticed. It is two elements. One, the family is definitely aware that that trafficker is exploiting other victims and what they're doing. And sometimes they're financially benefiting. And then two, these traffickers, it's almost like they're related to other traffickers. Their uncle was a trafficker. Their dad was a pimp. Their brother was a pimp. And by the way, when I say trafficker and pimp, those are both interchangeable. They're not two different people. It's just two different terms for the same person that I'm describing. And it is a generational thing where it's like a learned behavior. The other thing that we're noticing is that these people have been identified by law enforcement already. We already knew who they were because they've been arrested as a juvenile or in the past. And there's some kind of intervention that didn't happen when they got in trouble before that unfortunately didn't put them on a different path, and they went on the path that they were going to this point where they became a pimp and became an exploiter of victims. As far as money, we don't really find traffickers. I mean, perception's everything, right? I could open up a Facebook page right now and flash a bunch of money, have one of those money guns where the money flies out, and you think I have a lot of money based on what I'm showing on social media. But in reality, I really don't have anything, not even a pot to piss in. And so that's kind of how these traffickers are. They blow through money as fast as they get it. They don't do anything other than blow through it with expensive meals, renting Maseratis, all kinds of travel expenses, buying expensive items that either get lost or destroyed or stolen. They just blow through it. So I've never really found a trafficker with a whole bunch of money. However, what we are doing is, instead of basing our investigation solely on a victim, and the reason for that is because we've noticed that victims don't want to play the game of the justice system, where it's 1, 2, 3, 5 years before this thing gets resolved by a plea or going to trial. And they dip out, they bow out, they don't want to see this suspect anymore. They don't want to go to court. They don't want to pay for parking. They don't want to deal with this anymore. They want to be able to heal and move on. So instead of basing the entire investigation on a victim that might change their mind and our prosecution goes away, we are doing financial investigations on these traffickers now. We're seizing bank accounts. We're seizing Gucci purses and Rolex watches and their cars and all the things, with an intent to have other felonies to go after them, as well as hit them where it really hurts by taking their stuff.
Well, so then, you have to bypass the normal process and try to get them from the backside.
Yeah.
So the one thing that you'd mentioned in the pre-show is part of what your duties are, or what you're trying to do maybe now, is to educate juries because of the legal process. Like you said, it takes forever. But what is it about the juries you need to educate them on?
Yeah, so I've had a lot of experience with traffickers that think they can fight me and take the case to trial. And so we go to trial, and unless I have an informed jury or someone to come testify about the ins and outs of human trafficking as an expert witness, it's going to be really difficult for a jury to wrap their head around when I'm describing this victim freely walking down 27th Avenue with a phone in their hand. They're not locked in a bedroom somewhere or handcuffed to a bed like people think. They're actually, they could call the police right now, but they don't. How are they a victim? Like, they aren't able to make that connection. And so unless they understand the coercion and the fraud and all the other dynamics that go along with, and the force for that matter, that go along with human trafficking, they're not going to find this person guilty. And so it's imperative to me to make an impact with all of my awareness that I try and share in forms of interviews like this or community awareness presentations that I'm doing, to try and make an impact in that regard, because we need informed jurors.
So you had mentioned about a case that somebody got a pretty long sentence for. Kind of give us the background on that.
Yeah. So the biggest case in my career, it took 5 years to go to trial. It started with a girl who, this is familial trafficking, and familial trafficking is basically this victim was related to her trafficker. It was her uncle. He had first had sex with her when she was 13. She was living in a small town. Her mother was incarcerated. She didn't know who her father was. At one point, she thought her uncle was her father because there was some incest going on. She, at 13 years old, 14-ish, gets in some trouble with, you know, a small town. What do you do as a kid? You drink underage in a small town. And so she got herself in some trouble. And he was living down in Phoenix during that time. And so he told his mother, her grandma, because her mom had passed away already, why don't we have her come live with me down in Phoenix, and I'll give her some father influence. I'll put her in school. She won't be in trouble anymore. We'll abide by the probation, and she'll be all fine. And so, unfortunately, he was able to convince them, his mom, her grandma, to have her move down. And so when she moved in with him, that was the house that he was conducting a full brothel out of. And unfortunately, she was about 15 years old and was in this situation from about 15 to almost 17, where he would have men come every day. The girls would line up. They would choose which girl they wanted to have sex with. They'd go into the room. And then he also was continuing to have sex with her. He would do awful things to these women. This is the 7 victims that I'm talking about in that one particular case. The Department of Corrections officer and that girl from the college, as well as other adult females. And then the second juvenile was his 17-year-old stepdaughter, which was that Department of Corrections officer's daughter. So, and he was having sex with her as well. But in this case, which is also pretty unique, is he was obsessed with the book, The Story of O, which is a French pornography story about like the dominant and the submissive and like the BDSM type of thing, where these victims actually had been whooped with riding crops and had to wear dog collars and had been chained up and all kinds of things. There were rules. The girls weren't allowed to wear underwear and they weren't allowed to cross their legs when they sat down, because if a buyer came into the house, they needed to see what they were buying. Anyway, as far as the case, it went 5 years, like I said, to go to trial, not because we were not ready, but because the justice system unfortunately allows for continuances. And part of the defense's plan, in my opinion, was to delay until my main victim, who did go back to prostitution and heavily into drugs, they were hoping something would happen to her or she would change her mind. Same with the other victims. And so the delay ultimately put us in trial in 2015. In 2015, the movie 50 Shades of Grey came out.
Oh boy.
And so what I'm saying about these victims and being chained up and whooped with riding crops was being fantasized. People were on Dr. Phil talking about their amazing sex life because they watched 50 Shades of Grey. And so we had to sequester 600 jurors.
Wow.
We had an entire questionnaire for the jury. How do you feel about bondage and the dominant and the submissive? And how do you feel about this movie and this book? And, you know, to find our jury. And we found our jury. And we ended up going to trial in 2015. He was initially charged with 130 counts of dangerous crimes against children, sex misconduct with minor, sex trafficking, aggravated assault, all kinds of charges, furnishing harmful materials to a minor. The way that this case came to the law enforcement's attention, I skipped right over that. The 16-year-old disclosed to her sister that this was all going on, and luckily she called law enforcement. because they were going to go do pornography in California, and she tested positive for an STI. And he said, that's okay, we'll go get your little sister. So on that day, when she's like fed up with him, he had made plans to get her little sister, who was 13, back in the small town where she was from. And she said, yeah, no, I'm not going to let you do that to my little sister. And that's how this came about. I did find, however, that he made false reports to Department of Child Safety to try and have that 13-year-old placed with him already before any of that trip to California was planned. So he was already trying to make things put in motion to get that other kid. But as far as the outcome of the trial, he was found guilty on 101 counts, and he was sentenced to 493.5 years in prison.
Wow, so only got about 5 years per person.
Yeah.
So, what? Heidi, do you ever run into women traffickers, ladies that are kind of going down this career path?
We've had great leaders. They understood that there was something not right. And Eisenhower was really the first to warn the nation that, hey, there's this thing called the military-industrial complex, and we've got to be careful of it. Fast forward to John F. Kennedy, he actually called out the CIA, made the comment, I'm going to break it into a million pieces. And you have to ask yourself, what did he know? So for 40 years, we have this Cold War, giant, giant programs that are being built. But that Cold War, it gave rise to the things that President Eisenhower and President Kennedy warned us about. The military-industrial complex, the intelligence services at the time, we now know in Kennedy's assassination, we're part of his demise. It's like, how did we ever get here?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's unfortunate because a lot of them were victims themselves earlier in life, and they never had, even any law enforcement contact, or they did, they got arrested, they got out, and they went to do it themselves. Unfortunately, I've had a lot of females absolutely doing that. I've even had juveniles. I had one juvenile who was 16 pimping out two 14-year-olds.
Wow. We were Russ?
Yeah, he was on it. When we had him on.
Somebody said something about, you know, the high school kid, or not the high school, the junior high kid.
The junior high pimp. They were eighth grade. You know, they were pimping out their classmates for money. I think we have a mutual friend, Russ Tuttle, and I know he works with the Stop Trafficking Project, but he had he was on just a few days ago with us, Heidi. And he was talking about all the horrific stories. And we've done like 300 shows, and I've only had two shows where chills have gone through my body, and that was one of the two shows. But he actually talked about it, and he showed this girl's picture in the presentation that we did with him, the episode that we did. And horrible, tragic story. But anyway, she had been beaten so many times. She had all kinds of heart and cardio damage to her heart. She only had like a 5% heart function, where she was on a heart pump. And he said there are actually people out there that have a fetish to literally buy and have sex with people that have heart pumps. And this guy beat her so bad in the street with a crowbar that she ultimately ended up dying at age 26. But I couldn't believe, I mean, that's kind of like Silence of the Lambs stuff. I never in my wildest dreams thought about sex buyers being just attracted to people with a heart pump. Are there people out there that are really that sick?
Yeah, there's, I mean, I've been asked all kinds of really, really nasty, raunchy things.
Unbelievable.
I would say yes.
Yeah, obviously.
So I want to know, yes, Heidi, how, like, what kind of income is there involved for the girls who are being trafficked versus the traffickers? Are the girls making any income? Are they making a lot of income? Are they just barely surviving? What's kind of the compensation plan here?
So when I have conversations as an undercover being groomed by a trafficker, I ask them, well, do I get to keep any money? Oh, no, no, I hold it all for you. But it's for us. We're together. We're a family. We're a team. There's no money for these girls.
Wow. Zero. What a...
It is all taken from them. There's no money. There's promises.
So our audience and our listeners and viewers, they like solutions. They want to have action plans that they know that can be used, whether they have kids or grandkids or nieces and nephews. If you were to give us kind of and I know you have a new book coming out and the documentary that we showed prior to the show, but what would be some steps or some, you know, talking points that you would give our buyers so that our buyers
well,
that you would give our viewers and our listeners on when they're approached by buyers and stuff like this? I mean, how would you make this play out?
Well, as far as advice for the general public, knowing everything that you can about human trafficking, listening to podcasts like this, taking an online course, watching Sound of Freedom, watching Sex Trafficking in America. There's another movie called Wake Up that I would also recommend. It is based on true stories. It's not completely true, everything in the movie, especially I talked to the director about her depicting a police officer as a trafficker, which is not helpful for us.
No.
But in the movie, you do see this one trafficker and how he manipulates and recruits and grooms two different girls with two different vulnerabilities. The one girl, she's in child welfare. He meets her in person. He gets her like that. The other girl, he invests time in developing a relationship online, gets her to share personal information about herself, random shows up on the street corner by her school, because unfortunately she shared with him where she goes to school, and then they start hanging out, and he's further working that relationship to get her to be on his team and to run away from home. Her vulnerability was she was insecure about how she looked. But in that same movie also, in addition to seeing how that works and plays out with our youth, you see a buyer, and no one really talks about this, who started with pornography, literally sneaking pornography, watching it while wife is in the kitchen making dinner and little girl is hanging out with mom. I'm going to take 15 minutes for myself, self-care, I guess, and go into the bedroom and get on a laptop and start viewing pornography. And then that graduates into a situation where now he starts perusing the advertisements online. And then that graduates into he actually meets with a live juvenile victim that he didn't realize was a juvenile and gets caught. And he gets found out by his wife and then he attempts suicide. So the cycle, the full circle of all of this happening in this one movie is really incredible. I actually saw it on a flight on Delta. But it is a really good depiction of what's going on here domestically. But further to answer your question, as far as that goes, learn the signs and then learn how to report. Like, would you know who to call or how to call? Like you're at Starbucks and you hear somebody on a phone and it sounds like they're arranging dates and you see the computer open and you see, oh, this looks like girls provocatively dressed and like advertisements for people. Do I want the police to show up at Starbucks in uniform in a patrol car? Probably not. Do you know the National Human Trafficking Hotline? Do you know if your state has a hotline? Do you know the non-emergency number for local law enforcement? Do you know your silent witness phone number? And that's where I would report that. If it's not a crime happening right now, but you want law enforcement to know about it, be a good witness. Get a good description. If you can snap a picture of this person, get a license plate. Last known direction of travel, take note if they're with anyone, all of those things. And provide your information for law enforcement to contact you in case we have other questions. We're not trying to show up at your house, you know, for the neighbors to see the police car out front, but we do want to talk to you because you might have seen something else that we would need, and you may be able to positively identify this person later, and we're going to want to know that too. So all of those things, I would say, would be helpful, you know, for the general public to do their due diligence, and you know, if you see something, say something, just like in the airport.
I know for me, you know, growing, like I said, growing up in a Midwest rural community, we didn't have any of this, obviously, but I think the stereotype, Heidi, is most people think this is going to happen to somebody else. This is going to be in the inner city. This is going to be, you know, not in the suburbs, not in the rural areas. How prevalent is being trafficked or being sucked into this black hole with middle income families, upper income families compared to lower income?
Well, as far as your child getting involved, I would say if they have a social media profile that's open to the public, it could happen in any minute.
Yep.
is that prevalent. I mean, literally, I have done a search warrant on a suspect's Facebook page for the week that I talked to him, only a week. And in that time, he copied and pasted the message he had sent to me to hundreds of other profiles, all female, and also not just local to Arizona. He was fishing all over the United States. And I have extradited traffickers from Orlando, Florida, from Orlando to Reno, and brought them to Arizona for trying to recruit and groom me and keep them accountable for charges for what they were doing. It's really widespread.
Well, one more thing, Randy, that's why I have it on my mind. What is the... I come from a business and marketing background, and where I come from, it was lifetime customer value. What was the customer worth from the time they started purchasing from our company till the time that we either cut them loose or they went somewhere else to another vendor? In your world, what is the lifetime earnings of a sex trafficked victim to this trafficker?
Well, I would say that if they are doing 8 to 10 dates a day and they don't have any days off, then you can imagine and add up the amount of money that they could be making. I think they say that the life expectancy of a prostitute is 7 years.
Whoa.
Until they're dead, or just that's how long they do the career?
No, until they're dead, or like either something happens to them, they're involved in a shooting. You know, there's a lot of traffickers that are at odds with each other, and so they shoot each other, and whoever's in the car, so sad, too bad. And, you know, it's instances where they also are contracting, you know, sexually transmitted diseases and other things. So it's really a very high-risk profession to be in.
So what's the average transaction dollar value?
It all depends. I mean, there's traffickers that try to advertise higher dollar amounts for particular sex acts based on the area that they're in, or let's say they're here for a large event. Like we just had Super Bowl, not this year, but last year in Phoenix. And, you know, I'm pretty sure traffickers up the price because it's Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, they are making as much as, you know, $80 to $100 per buyer. Or more if it's a higher end.
So if we're talking, say we're at an average of $50.
So about $800 is.
So let me ask you this, Heidi. Would $50 be a good average transaction just across the board?
No, I would say $100.
$100 is average, right? Okay, so $100, and how many acts a day?
10 to 15.
So let's say 12. So each girl is worth $1,200 per day, correct? Times 7 days a week?
Times three or four girls per
times practice. 7 days wow. a week. Okay, times 52 weeks a year. So that girl is worth $436,800 times 7 years. So one girl could be worth $3,057,000 to that trafficker over the course of a 7 year career span, correct?
Yeah.
And multiply that times how many girls?
Three to four.
Wow. Let's say 3.5. That's $10 million over 7 years,
and they don't keep any of that money to show
wow.
anything for it.
Okay, so speaking of money, is it all cash? Is it Venmo? Is it check? How are they? Because obviously they're probably not reporting this. If I were guessing, Randy,
not paying
so
taxes.
What is the
not paying taxes? No.
What is the transaction in? Is it like bills, 20s, 100s? What?
So yeah, typically it's cash, but online it's moved more towards Cash App, Venmo, Chime, PayPal. And that is helpful for us because we can follow the money. You know, right. Cash, I'm not going to be able to say. I got a victim that says this is how many dates, but I don't really know. But I can base that off of, you know, a lot of traffickers have a quota, a rule that you cannot come back to the hotel room until you make me $1,000 a night, right? And that is over and over and over again. No taking a shower, no eating, no sleeping. No taking your shoes off, no changing clothes. So there is the where the millions come from, I guess.
Unbelievable. Heidi, mm-hmm. talk to us real quick. I know, give us the name of those movies, and I know you're in one of the documentaries. Give us the name of that documentary, and then let's talk a little bit about your book and your website.
Yeah, so ironically, in May this year will be our five-year anniversary for the documentary that was filmed on my particular unit. May of 2019 is when it came out. It's called Sex Trafficking in America, And it is produced and filmed by Frontline PBS. And then I suggested we view the other movies, Sound of Freedom. And I believe that's on either Amazon or Netflix or something right now.
Okay.
If you haven't had the opportunity to see that. That's a great movie, but it is more of an international depiction of international trafficking, not really how it happens domestically here. And then the movie Wake Up, and they have an Instagram that's the official Wake Up movie. That's the other one that I would highly recommend. Even though I don't agree with them depicting a police officer as a trafficker, I still would recommend that movie because it is an excellent depiction of how a trafficker will seek out vulnerable people.
And your website is achanceforawareness.com, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So on there, people, are there ways for people to support you on that or what?
Yeah, so I have my online course and then I have a blog. I'm also a, right now, this past year, I've written 6 articles for them. Brains Magazine, I'm doing blog articles for them. And then I have my book will be on here. It's coming out at the end of April. And it is going to be titled Talk to Them. And it's navigating these difficult conversations with youth in a digital age. And it's unique because I'm modeling this book and these conversations in the form of a plan, providing questions and things that I would ask as an interviewer, a forensic interviewer of victims of crimes, sex crimes specifically. And so giving parents a plan of not only when to have these conversations and what kind of things to talk about, and not just for sex trafficking either. I'm covering sextortion, luring minors for sex, you know, some other crimes in this book, because I think they're all pretty related as far as conversations with strangers on digital media.
Go ahead, Randy.
No, I was just going to say the process, you guys are kind of trying to bust the buyer, but is there any process for, what am I trying to think of? What you're doing now is you're teaching parents how to get in front of their kids. So what we'll want to do is try to stop it before it ever happens type thing.
Yeah, because by the time I'm coming out there to your house and I'm sitting on the couch and you're having your child tell me what happened, it's already too late.
Mm-hmm.
So my idea is addressing this problem before that point, before it's too late, and having some prevention. And so that's where I stress to parents, the national average age of entry into sex trafficking is 13.
Wow.
It was 15 when I first started in 2007, and it's inching closer and closer to 12, 11 years old. So that means that parents need to talk to their kids at 8, 9, 10. Those conversations that are not easy to have with an 8, 9, 10-year-old need to happen. Otherwise, if you don't do it, the traffickers and the buyers and the child predators are going to have a great time talking to your kid.
Heidi, does your online course, is that designed kind of primarily for the parents to kind of walk them through what kind of conversations they need to have at this early age?
No, that's going to be the book. The course is actually an expanded version of the human trafficking problem. I talk about the evolution that I experienced as an officer. I didn't go into my background, but when I first started back in 2007-ish, we were arresting prostitutes all day long. And how we've evolved to now see them as victims, and we have a lot of repairing relationships to do, where we're trying to actually ask them a question we were never asking before, which is, what can I do to help you get out of this situation you're
in? Right.
What can we actually do to help you? And so now I talk about the evolution of how we've moved away from that, and now we're targeting sex buyers and targeting traffickers and trying to actually help victims. But then I go through, obviously, Human Trafficking 101, the laws, victimization, the vulnerabilities of victims, how they fall into this lifestyle. I talk about traffickers, obviously, and more in depth in recruitment and grooming techniques and, lots of my experience with that. And then I talk about buyers and how right now, at least in Arizona, there is no felony for a buyer if they were to solicit me 15 times, it would just be, compounded jail time. There is no felony, but what is not fair is that if I arrest a prostitute in Arizona, her fourth conviction in a 5-year period is a felony and she'll go to prison for a year. So it is an imbalance for sure right now. And I talk about, you know, what's going on with that and some of the bills and legislation that is out there right now. And then I talk about the indicators of trafficking so that people can recognize branding, for example. Just like we're all watching Yellowstone and the Duttons, they put the Y on their cows and they get all mad when people steal their cows. Well, traffickers brand their victims. They put their moniker name, or I've seen property of the trafficker's name on people. Sometimes it's on their face. Sometimes it's under the clothing. But it is where these victims are branded, and it's a sign of ownership. And I talk through, you know, those kind of indicators. Let's say you're at the, you know, gas station drive-thru, or I mean, gas station line to pay for your gas, and you see three people with the same tattoo, and they all look like they're provocatively dressed. That would be like a ding, 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 bingo jackpot. What do I do now? I see this. Who do I call? You know what I mean? So that's where I go more in depth of the reporting. And then I talk, the last thing I talk about is how people can get involved in the fight without becoming a vigilante.
Right, right. And, you know, you said something about asking them if there's anything you can do to help them get out of this. A lot of times they're too scared to get out of it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why we have other things in place. We have a victim advocate that actually is assigned to the squad and goes out in the middle of the night when we're out there. And she is a person that can pull them aside confidentially. And she has a backline phone number to all the shelters. She has funding for bus tickets and flights if we need to do that. And actually resources right then in the moment of our rescue, our attempt to rescue. That's what we've got going on. And then we've got the things in place, obviously, for where to take them if they take us up on our offer.
When you say they're branded, are you literally mean like branded with like a hot branding iron or like tattoo?
Tattoo.
Unbelievable.
I mean, some victims have described getting burned by their trafficker with cigarettes as a punishment.
Heck, that's nothing anymore.
Yeah.
Well, Heidi, I truly appreciate you coming on and sharing this. We've had a lot of human trafficking angles, and you're the first to do it kind of from the street.
Well, from an undercover standpoint.
Yeah, pretty much.
We have a lot of people educating on the pitfalls of trafficking, and we've had some victims on too, but nobody from the law enforcement side, which kind of puts a whole different spin on it, Randy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, Heidi, thank you so much for coming on here and sharing it. I know that now that you're out of that career, it's probably easier for you to talk about it and educate people on what's going on. But we just want to tell you thank you for doing that. Thank you for spending all those years dragging criminals and the roughnecks off the street and just trying to make Arizona and America a better place.
You wanted to say all those years in heels.
That's right. Heels and a miniskirt. You know, that's
well, but, I got to think you got thick skin, you know, with all the garbage you've seen and the propositions you've had. Yes. You've heard it all.
No wonder she's writing a book.
So you wouldn't be very easy to pick up in a bar, would you?
Probably not.
No, you see right through it.
When's your book out, Heidi?
April 30th.
Perfect. Awesome.
All right.
And Amazon, is it on your website? What's the best place for people to secure that?
Yeah, it'll be on Amazon and my website. Uh-huh.
Perfect. Awesome. Right. Well, thank you so much for coming on here again. Heidi Chance from achanceforawareness.com. Thank you so much, Heidi. Hope to have you back on for some future updates.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Take care. See ya.
See ya.
Alrighty.
Bye.
Thanks for watching another exciting episode of Patriots with Grit. We want to keep you informed, so if you would, just go over to patriotswithgrit.com and give us your first name and your email so we can keep you up to date. Also, be sure to subscribe, like, and share so we can keep bringing you truth. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.